Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Chicago Gametrepreneur Show. For our first-time listeners, we're a show all about helping indie games in Chicago, whether it's providing advice for new creators or showcasing the awesome stuff that's going on. We're really about just promoting and helping the indie community. If you want to help us out, please subscribe, rate, and review. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Chicago Gametrepreneur. And our Twitter at CGSPod. We'll be posting some great offers from our local sponsors. We have a new sponsorship with Unruled Notebooks and some excellent offers from Basecamp. Hope you enjoy the episode. A quick note on this show. We actually recorded it a few months ago and it got lost in our archives. Obviously, Tumbleseed has done great in the time since then. So this is kind of a bonus episode, just to hear some of the thoughts and ideas that went into the creation of this awesome game. Enjoy. All right, welcome to a new episode of the Chicago Gametrepreneur Show. It is officially episode 20.
Yeah, still can't say it.
It's
a very hard word to say.
Gametrepreneur.
It's great for Google, though. We're the only Gametrepreneur Show out there.
That's true. If you can spell it, you've passed the test. You can access our content.
We are low filtering for our audience.
So. We're sitting here with Benedict Fritz.
Yep.
Hello.
Let's run sponsors real quick, just to get it out of the way.
Well, let's tell them who we are first.
That's true.
There's three people here.
And Rob is...
We've mentioned Benedict Fritz.
I'm not usually here.
But he is usually awesome.
Okay.
Rob is actually wearing the shirt. So
oh, yeah. I'm wearing my Twitter handle, Bobby Locks. Yeah.
Rob Lockhart. And you're working on?
Codemancer.
And I'm Kyuan Hung, and I'm working on contract work.
Cool.
And you have a new project. Do you want to give it a quick shout out?
Sure. I'm Benedict Fritz, and I'm working on a game called Tumbleseed. Do you want me to go into what it is or your pitch?
Yeah, why don't we go?
Well, how about we do sponsors and then we'll...
Sure, all right. So, as usual, we'd just like to give a shout-out to both of our great sponsors. One is InnoPrints, where we're actually getting new Chicago Gametrepreneur cards.
I'm excited.
They'll be available at BitBash. So, they're great for your local printing needs. You can get 15% off your first order by using the code CGS. And they do all kinds of stuff. They do business cards, brochures, t-shirts even. So a great local shop. The second is Ledger General, run by our friend Marty. And if you're running a small business, you got taxes to do.
It's true.
All know what that's like, and we all know how much it sucks. Marty is your expert. He'll take care of all of that for you. If you mention the podcast, when you call him up, you get a free half-hour consult.
Is the best.
Yep. So anyway, going back to your new project.
Cool. It's a game called Tumbleseed. We've been working on it for probably 2 years in late September, so more or less 2 years. It's a game about rolling a seed up a mountain. It's a, we call it a roly roguelike, so we kind of procedurally generate this mountain,
mm-hmm.
and then we have this balancing mechanic where you're basically balancing this seed around holes and enemies and getting different power-ups, that sort of thing.
Very cool. And
yeah,
you had a shout-out in Red Eye.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah, they got in touch with us. We're like, hey, we heard you're at BitBash.
Mm-hmm.
We're writing about that.
So
tell us
I checked out the site. You do have a Twitter feed, but it feels like it's been a little under the radar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we haven't really set about trying to tell the world about it in a serious way yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of, you know, maybe in a month or so is kind of the goal,
mm-hmm.
or hope. Where once we kind of lock down exactly what platforms we're on, so we can actually say what platforms we're going to be on,
cool.
Exactly a more precise time when it's coming out. The website right now says late summer, but it'll probably be early 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we haven't put a ton of effort into it yet, but once we're just kind of trying to get all the
into the marketing.
Right.
We put a ton of effort
into the game, but like, yeah, we're just trying to like line up all the pieces so that we can actually know what the game is and what we're talking about and have it be a thing that we feel very strongly about when we do decide to tell people about it.
Very nice. Any plans for a Kickstarter campaign, or is this going to be more just straight to market?
Straight to market.
With the 2 years under the belt, it kind of
makes sense that you're
kind of building this out. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And we've been more consciously trying to kind of save up all of our kind of media push until everything's kind of in place. Kind of a lot of people are now doing the like show everything throughout the entire development. We're kind of taking the approach of don't really talk about it, but then when you do start talking about it, talk about it a lot.
Gotcha.
And then kind of
old
really
school.
Yeah, a little more old school, a little more like now that everyone's doing it one way, we'll kind of do it the other way.
Yeah,
since the other way is a little more rarefied at this point.
I think there's certainly advantages doing the second way, right? You don't have to show a placeholder.
Sure.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Yeah, no, yeah, there's totally advantages to both ways. And who knows, we could be completely wrong not doing it the other way. But, you know, it's always a thing where as soon as people are giving advice to do something a certain way, there's usually an expiration date on that because as soon as everyone starts doing it, it loses a lot of its value.
Right, if everyone's zigging you on a zag, that type of deal.
Yeah.
Very cool. Maybe you just talk about the genesis of how you got your team together and how you came up with the concept for the game.
Sure. So Tumbleseed is kind of based on a very old arcade cabinet from 1983 called Ice Cold Beer. You either know it or you don't. You've never been like, oh, I think I've heard of that. It's like, you're either like, you've played it.
Yeah, I definitely never heard of it.
Yeah.
This is brand new.
So it's a very
old... I
hadn't
until you talked about it.
Yeah. It's a very old mechanical arcade cabinet where it's literally a metal bar and a marble on this bar.
Oh.
And you're kind of pushing it up this wall, and this wall has holes on it. And you're basically trying to balance this marble up this wall. And so we found this...
you have independent control.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that's the part I forgot to mention. Yeah, so you're basically tilting either side of the bar up or down, and that then makes the marble roll accordingly.
I see.
So we kind of played this old game at Logan Arcade here in Chicago and fell in love with it. And a lot of people seem to have a very deep love for it, but it's kind of this gaming mechanic that was lost. It's this thing that's very fun. It's kind of like indirect control mechanism, and it existed, and then it never made its way to digital, to a digital game.
Yet,
exactly. So then we decided, like, oh yeah, let's see what we can do with that, because, you know, as soon as you are no longer constrained by being in the physical world and being like, here's a marble, there's gravity, and that's, like, the most of what you can do. Maybe you can have a bumper if you really, like, went into it deeply. But with a digital game, you can do anything. So, you know, we have power-ups, we have enemies, we have a world, we have characters, we have this kind of background story, we have all of these things that only a digital game can do, and that was kind of the goal of the game, was this digital exploration of this lost game mechanic.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's fun how you can kind of borrow or steal, like, one concept, but then you build something completely different out of it.
Right.
Yeah, there's like so many. Yeah, that I can't remember the guy's name. There's someone who's like a whole blog is dedicated to like seeking out old arcade games that never their game mechanic never made it.
Whoa,
that's
super interesting. I'd love to see that.
Until
recently,
be a great like resource if you're like trying to get inspired for a game, right? Just going through all the old mechanics and seeing which ones could translate over well into modern games.
Right. Yeah, because it's all, we always joke like, oh, every game is Zelda. Because in a certain way, every game is Zelda. And that's how it is for a lot of games. It's like, you know, you can very easily kind of draw back these lines to where they came from and very quickly kind of see the lineage. Whereas here, we're hopefully doing something new enough that the lineage is very short. Of course, we're pulling other, we mix it with gameplay elements from other games, and that's kind of where you can see the lineage there, but in terms of, like, the core movement and core interaction, that's hopefully kind of new. Which, of course, caused us a lot of pain because we had to figure everything out.
Yeah,
and we couldn't just,
it seemed like you had this solid core of this one mechanic forever, and then you were trying to figure out, like, sort of, what's the larger genre that this fits into?
Right,
Is it doomed to stay, like, arcadey and short, or can we build out this world?
Totally. And I mean, that's like what the 2 years has been. In a lot of ways, like, we've only been working on the game as it exists now since or let's see, February, January.
Okay.
Like that's when we January, February of this year. Granted, that's a year and a half into it. Is when we really like figured out this is, these are the systems. These are the things that work together. We're no longer wondering, oh, is this a short mobile game? That's what it was when we first started, like, oh, quick play, short mobile game. Then we kind of ventured off into, like, this, like, arcade, actually, like, very different, like, fast play kind of exploration. And then we went and did, like, a Zelda dungeon crawler kind of thing. And so it's just, like, we've gone down all of these paths to kind of figure out, like, what fits with this mechanic.
I think you've really hit it.
Well, thanks.
So how does your iteration process work? Do you just kind of build into a concept? And how do you know when to kill the concept if it's not working?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the hardest thing in game development, I think.
I agree with you, yeah. It's
like
really
that,
tough.
That process. So what we did was we'd make a prototype. We'd kind of like make the smallest thing possible. And then we'd play it for a while and we'd kind of build it out for a while until we realized that we were really unhappy. And then we kind of go, oh God, what are we doing? Okay, time to start over and try something else. Like take the lessons that we learned and try something else. And kind of did that a whole bunch of times. In terms of knowing when to cut it off, I don't know. Because it's one of those things that's so hard to... You never know what the problem is fully. You never,
right.
like...
It's hard to kind of know that in advance, right?
Right.
You have to get the prototype built, and
right.
then you play it, and you go, oh, this doesn't work at all.
Right. But even when you do play it, sometimes it does work, but for a little bit, and then you're like, oh,
yeah.
this...
Yeah.
But then this is kind of shallow. Or, on the other hand, it's like, okay, this kind of works, but what's missing?
Mm-hmm.
Is the thing that's missing good art and good feel and, like, tweaking that? Or is the thing that's missing just that it's not good?
Mm-hmm.
And so is the thing completely flawed? Or can you work with it and make it better?
There's countless times when I was at Toy Studio
mm-hmm.
where we would say, okay, this game, whatever prototype we were working on, is just like something's missing. It's like not fun yet.
Right.
And I would always be like, there's got to be a solution.
Right.
And I would go into the, like, room that we use for random prototyping and, like, shut the door and be like, I can figure this out. And it happened maybe, like, 1 out of 100
yeah.
times that I would actually, like, oh,
right.
I figured it out.
Right.
Mostly it was completely unsatisfying.
Right. And it's also tough because, like, knowing how to describe what's wrong is a challenge in and of itself. Like, there's first the problem of figuring out that it's not working. Then there's the problem of describing why it's not working. And those two are, like, not... They don't come together. And so a lot of times it's, like, one person on the team...
That's the step that I skipped. Is describing what
right.
was wrong.
But because
I would just
it's a
go
whole...
back, I would just go to fixing it.
Right. It's a whole other... Well, the reason why it's because it's a whole other problem. And so sometimes we'd have a case where, like, someone on the team would be like, this is not good. And the other person would be like, well, are we sure? But the other person wouldn't be able to describe why
right,
it's
they just
not
say
good.
It feels bad, but
right.
I can't tell you why it feels
and then
bad.
Maybe like 4 months later, we'd look back after we had built something completely different. And then we'd look back and then we'd go, oh, now we understand the game more. Now we know why that didn't work. Now we can describe why that is bad, but only with more and like all this extra work making the new thing.
Right.
Only then did we have the ability to go back and describe why the old thing was bad.
It's funny, I think that we, like, subconsciously we know when things aren't working, but it's harder for us to kind of verbalize that into something people can understand. Like,
yeah.
I've heard that you can't, you don't really understand a problem unless you can verbalize it. And that's when you kind of have a grasp on it in a firm enough, like, concrete way that you can put it into, you know, language that other humans understand.
Right. Totally. Yeah, the only question is, like, will that happen fast enough, or will all the time that you spend working on the game while you feel like it's bad but aren't sure, will that like be wasted time?
Right, you could be trying like
right.
to fix this one thing where really the problem's over like in the controls
exactly.
or something like that.
Exactly.
I think Dan the Duck, what's his real name from
I was actually
Dan
thinking the
Dan
same thing.
Dan
yeah.
Cook? No,
Dan,
not Dan.
Not Dane Cook.
Dan
Cook. Yeah.
I think his name is Dan Cook.
Yeah.
Dan C, yeah, that's how I know.
Yeah, Dan C too.
Anyway, yeah, he has, like, a lot of material on this, like,
yep.
you know, just sort of thinking about the landscape of possible games,
right,
and how best to explore that. And since there is so much fertile ground, you know, you assume, since there is so much ground to cover, you can afford to sort of throw a lot away.
Yep.
Because
there's always more.
Yeah.
No, he's very smart.
I was actually going to bring up a talk that he gave. When you were talking about our art earlier, he said you should actually use, like, really crappy art for all your prototypes, because then you don't get distracted
right.
by the artwork.
Yep.
Just,
and that's what we did. And that's also partially why we haven't, like, talked about it that much, just because it's, like, it's, yeah, it doesn't look nice.
Right.
Versus a lot of games that I see in active development on Twitter that are very popular, it's, like, they look nice very quickly.
Yeah.
That's not to say that there aren't very interesting game development blogs where, you know, they don't look good, but it's still interesting, but it's tougher to get people.
I think that it's like when people set out to write a novel, there's like kind of two kinds of novelists.
Right.
There's like people who diagram out,
right,
like, this is what's going to happen, these are all the plot beats, and
then there's Stephen King, who's like, what you do is you write down, you sit down, and then you just keep writing, and then it's done.
Yeah, you write a draft, and then it's crap, you throw it away, you write another draft, and now it's done. I think that the sort of no graphics approach is sort of like the
diagram out
sort of,
for sure,
like mechanics first,
for sure,
approach. But then there's some people who like really need that back and forth between the artist and the designers.
Yeah.
So
I think one of the benefits of that cheap prototyping is that it's just faster to do, right? Because you don't have to worry about artwork.
Ideally, you would make a game that never needed artwork. You could make a text-based game.
That's true. Actually, I did find
like
interesting
a vector game.
Interesting problem I had this week is that I was trying to build like a testing like rig for my game, and I got all caught up in the UI. And I was like, oh, you have
right.
to UI to do this. And I was like, oh wait, this is what console is for.
Right.
So I just rebuilt console. And I was like, oh, this is so easy.
Right. Yeah, and it's also. This is all, that also is kind of like the game engine problem of like, well, do you want to make a game or do you want to make a game
right.
engine? Like the number of people who have the self-discipline to do both is not super
in a row.
High. Yeah, or just like, and even simultaneously, it's not super high. And
yeah.
it's all part of the same problem of like, what are you actually trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
And do you have the ability to stay focused enough that you don't go down some weird rabbit hole and then get completely discouraged? Yeah.
I heard something recently about how indie game development has become sort of a Unity monoculture, and that if like Unity, well, first of all, there's a lot of like brittleness in Unity, just like one version to the next.
Like the fact that I can't play Unity games on Chrome now.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, they like killed the web player ish.
Huh.
More or less, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
But the potential that, like, if we all sort of go that route and it gets cut off by, for some reason,
mm-hmm.
whatever, if it's, like, just breaks or the company folds or whatever,
yeah.
then now we're, like, SOL.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? You're kind of a diehard Unity person.
I don't know if I would call myself diehard. I think it's the tool that I use, and I think it's the best option out there. Do I like that it's the only thing that people use? Absolutely not. Like, I think that's very bad. For all the reasons that you listed, I wish that there was something that was open source and free and not run by a company. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I often wonder, like, is it possible for software that is used by so many different people for so many different things, is it possible for that not to be bad? And is it possible for it not to be made by a large company? I don't know, because it's like every piece of software that's used by a lot of people is pretty universally hated. Like Photoshop, everyone hates Photoshop.
Microsoft Word,
yeah. Everyone hates Microsoft Word. All of these things that do 5,000 different things for 5,000 different people, it's going to be bad no matter what. And I just wonder, like, you know, and that's part of, like, why Unity is great is that it is so flexible, but that's also partially why it's bad,
mm-hmm.
and why people are like, why isn't this fixed, Unity? Why is this? Why are you reintroducing bugs? It's like, well, because they're working on like 8 billion things, they, you know, they have so much, they're trying to do so much that they can't make the core thing super solid. I mean, not to say that it isn't solid. It's solid enough, but when you work in Unity long enough, you just, sometimes, like, core pieces of functionality will break in an update, and it's like, man, it's rough. But, yeah, I don't know. But then it's like, you know, would it be any better if it were open source? And then it were, like, this problem of, like, oh, these people don't like these features. They're making a fork, and now there's two versions. And now, oh, there's, and then it's like a Linux thing, or it's like any other sort of open source software thing, or, oh, the main maintainer who is holding together this, like, loose social group, like, is done. What happens now? So it's like both things totally have problems, and
sure.
I don't think either answer is, like, correct, but I do wish that there were more options, for
mm-hmm.
sure.
I think, you know, I think it goes back to what you said first, is that do what works for you, right? Neither one of us are using Unity for our projects. Certainly something that I've considered, but, you know, use a tool that fits what you're making.
Yeah, right? I totally agree with that, too, where it's like people worry way too much about tools, where it's like
mm-hmm.
A 13-year-old kid, including past me, like, reads online, who's like, oh, yeah, what do you do for making games? And then they read, like, the word C++, and then they're like, oh, yeah, that's the real stuff right there. And then it's like they have this, like, warped perception of, like, oh, if you're not doing C++, you're not doing it right. But
I did the same thing with, like, American Cinematographer magazine. When I was in film school, I was like, well, you can't make a real movie unless you've got, like, 35mm
right.
camera.
Right.
It's like, that's completely false.
Right. So yeah, finishing something is the first thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We often talk about, because this is the Gametrepreneur show, like, money and stuff. So how are you guys financing Tumbleseed?
We're self-funded.
Which means
that we saved up a lot of money, or
okay.
enough money that we can then kind of work through those savings to...
So are you guys just full-time on it, or are you kind of doing half and half?
We're full-time. We've been full-time on it. So before that, I did a mixture. Before that, I was an iOS developer, and I worked a job for 2 years doing full-time iOS development.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole time, I was kind of saving money with the intent of maybe one day doing my own thing. So
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of that. And then after that, I also did some contract work. So in the beginning, it was kind of more split. But now, more recently, we've gotten more focused and kind of singularly, focused on...
Yeah, so I think, you know, when you're in the iterative stage, having something else to do, and, you know, you're not as worried about the burn, right? But now that you kind of say, like, oh, we have an idea, we like it, you can kind of see the clear path from A to B and roughly estimate how long this will take, so...
Right, and then you can say, oh, yeah, how much money do I have? How much am I spending per month? Am I going to make it or not?
Time
mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's a really good way to do it, because I think a lot of people just go, okay, to do my big leap thing, I'm going to quit my day job and just try to do it. And then, you know, but that iteration process takes a while
mm-hmm.
to get to, like, the right idea. And if you don't have runway, maybe you, like, one, you don't get through the iterations, or two, you pick the first one, and that's not
right.
really the one you want,
right.
but you're forced to carry it through because you don't have the runway. So
yeah.
I think that's a really smart way to do it.
Yeah, it's a tough balance to strike, for sure.
We've heard no two answers be the same, really.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Again, I think it, you know, it's what works for you, and I think the real thing is that people just have to stick with it, because a lot of people will get, you know, year in and not have something work, and
I think it's also important to, like, not do something that you haven't, that you aren't sure that you have to be good at what you're doing, or decent, before you kind of stop doing other work. Like, I was making games for many, I don't know, not that many, but, like, four years before.
Okay.
And, like, I'd made, like, a bunch of stuff, and it was funny, because, like, when I no longer worked, like, my full-time job, then I was actually already, like, 3/4 into my iOS game, Dudeski, and so it was, like, I already had a thing that was so close to completion that it kind of made sense. It was
mm-hmm.
like, oh, you know, if I take 2 months to finish this, like, I've already put in all these months, then that kind of makes sense. Like, it's a
right,
thing
yeah.
that I know that I can finish. The scope is fully there. Mm-hmm. This is how long it will take. Let's do it.
So you're jumping out of the plane and you have a... 80% chance that the parachute's going to work.
Right.
It's
right.
Not just running out of the plane going, well, I hope this thing works on the moment.
Right, or
down.
Even, do I have a parachute? Do I know how they work? Do I...
Or, like, do I have enough fabric to make a parachute as I fall and enough thread and
mm-hmm.
a needle?
Right. So yeah.
Do we have something from
we
Facebook
do.
Here?
We do have questions. So, yeah, why don't we jump into questions from Facebook? Number one... do you guys ever run into intellectual copyright issues? Probably a question for the group, but since you're the guest, we'll let you take it first.
No. Not really.
All of my copyright issues are very stupid. None of them are intellectual.
All dumb things, right?
Yeah, no, not really, luckily. Yeah, I don't know in what case I would, or in what case... games do, if they're kind of like...
I mean, I have this concept knocking around that I tried to make for a while, which was like a game where you play as... Basically, you play as the rabbit from Monty Python.
Okay, there you would maybe have some problems.
Yeah, so that's the question. It's like, okay, do they just own the concept of rabbits that
right.
are murderous?
Right.
No,
or,
that's from Watership Down, right?
So yeah, it was a thing that luckily my dad is an IP attorney.
Wow, that is funny.
So I talked it over with him, and basically his thoughts on that were like, no, technically they don't, but they could make trouble for you if they wanted to. They could just like
right.
you know, file suit anyway,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And in which case, if they do that, you can just change it to like a chipmunk or something.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be a rabbit.
Right.
And then you're fine. And they'll never sue you unless you have a ton of money.
Right.
Already.
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say part of the reason that I might not have any problems is I haven't done anything successful enough to get
right.
anyone chasing
yeah,
after my negative dollars right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe after Tumbleseed, like the American Society of Gardeners will come after us.
Well, I think
plants.
This might be in reference to ice cold beer.
Oh, no. I mean, it's like platformers where it's
mm-hmm.
like running on platforms
mechanic.
Is a thing. I think it might be an issue if we made a physical cabinet, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would maybe run into issues. But like, it's like first-person shooters as a genre.
Like pinball games, yeah.
Pinball games as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
Like balancing and rolling as a genre, it's, I think, distant enough that
yeah.
we'll be fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Question from friend of the pod, Jay Margolis. This is for Benedict. Do you like pizza? Elaborate and be specific.
I do.
So,
I had pizza last night, actually. It was pepperoni from Dante's. It was pretty good.
Are we being
what's
specific
your favorite
for Jay?
Variety of pizza.
My favorite variety? I do like a supreme. You know, it's got to be... Too much sausage will ruin a supreme.
Mm-hmm.
But a supreme...
Because of the salt, or...?
I just don't love sausage on pizza. I love sausage on its own, but sausage on pizza too much. I had the most incredible pizza, though, in L.A., like maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's actually a place that has a location in Chicago, which is hilarious because I'd never been to the one here, but I went to the one in LA. And they have this egg and prosciutto pizza where it's just like this egg in the middle. You crack it open, you get the yolk on the pizza, you get that prosciutto, you get that pizza dough, and
nice.
It's like
messy,
the best. It's like the best breakfast sandwich as a pizza that you've ever had in your life.
It's an amazing combination.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. It's
to our gentle readers that. This is an inside joke referencing the fact
sure.
that you're half of the Pizza Pals.
Right. Yeah, so Pizza Pals is a stream that my friend David Lasky and I used to do, and now we mostly just DJ every once in a while. We'll be DJing at BitBash a week from Saturday.
If you haven't seen them DJ, it's an extravaganza.
Wow, I'll take it.
We should, we don't have a shameless plug sound, do we? But
boom!
Shameless plug, BitBash, August 13th.
It's like
August
the 13th. Plug of a bath, maybe?
Yeah, okay. We're very analog on the show.
I've been trying to make a drain sound, but I don't think that works.
Anyway, I have another question about your body of work so far has been heavily mountainous.
That's true.
Do you plan to just continue the mountain theme?
So yeah, I realized at some point like that is actually very true. My first commercial release was Dude Ski. Exactly.
Now you're coming up.
Now you're coming up a mountain. So Dude Ski was a skiing game in which you ski down a mountain.
Mm-hmm.
There were four different sections to the mountain. Now making Tumble Seed, you're moving a seed up a mountain. There are four different sections. I don't know how that happened. That wasn't intentional at all. Tumble Seed originally, or like one of the first themes that we came up, or the very first theme that we came up with was that you were moving a seed, or not a seed, a rock from the center of the earth out into space. And so you're kind of like using, you're kind of like part of a space elevator, and you were kind of like moving this hot rock out into space, and you were like aliens. And then the second theme was like that you were balancing on the bridge of eyeglasses belonging to two aliens on either side of the screen. That was called Cosmic Lift, which is actually a pretty good name. But that was probably the best thing about it. No, it was actually pretty decent. So yeah, it happened accidentally, and then we were like, what? And then we had this huge list of like, what are things that roll? It was like donuts, but then we're like, okay, donut counting, can't do that. Records, well, it's not really a music
game. It's also
game.
Really similar to, I don't know if you played Police Trainer.
No.
The classic arcade game,
what's
Police
that?
Trainer. It's like a shooter.
So many
quests. Where it's just like tests of your visual acuity, memory, it's marksmanship.
So it's like those
concentration.
Like brain training games on DS?
Sort of. It's like that mixed with actual aim. It was like a light gun.
Yeah, the controller's a light gun.
Yeah.
So even memory, you play.
There's a bonus level which has donuts, and you have to shoot all the donuts and avoid all the coffee cups. And there's like jelly donuts with no hole. Those are worth the most.
Do they explode when you shoot them?
For sure.
Okay. That makes sense.
Anyway, next remake.
Yeah, mountains.
Police Trainer.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going to make a good game about mountains and Police Trainer.
So
I'm going to move this real quick because it's time for the
police.
Speed round.
Oh.
This is a new, hopefully reoccurring feature. So this is just the fast Q&A bit.
Fast.
And our twist is that you can choose to
pass.
Okay.
No, actually, it's better than that. You can choose to rebound.
Oh, to ask one.
And then we have to answer the question.
Okay. Damn.
So let me pull it up. Rob was unprepared for this.
I was.
So I'm going to make him answer all the rebounds.
Okay. Serves me right. This is what happens when you don't do your homework, kids.
So, kicking off the speed round, if you had one game on a desert island, what would it be?
Do I have an internet connection?
Sure, why not?
Counter-Strike.
Whatever game alerts the authorities.
It's just me and every Counter-Strike game. Guys, I'm really on an island. Please believe me.
And they're
this
like,
push
me, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'd pick Counter-Strike. It's one of the great games.
Yeah.
It is insane that game is as big as it is now.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
15 years after the fact.
90...
I want to say 98 or 99. I know that they had their 15-year anniversary. I don't know when it was. Like, maybe in the last 2 years, though. And
I think the crazy thing about it is it's still very close to the original
template,
right?
Yeah.
So little's changed.
It's like, oh, now we have, like, nicer graphics.
Although you can buy
skins for guns.
When did the dust map come out?
I think it was, like, the second version or something like that. No, maybe
I was, like, late to the party. I joined in 1.5. 1.6 was kind of the final version. 1.6 is when they released Steam, and that was, like, when they forced everyone to switch over to Steam, and everyone hated Steam. Steam was, like, public enemy number one for Counter-Strike players.
It was like, Origin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, GameSpy. Remember GameSpy?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Played a little Battlefield on GameSpy.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Counter-Strike. It's what an incredible game.
Great answer. What's your most egregious game debt? The game that you have in your game library and you haven't played?
That's a good question. Papers, Please. I've heard nothing but good things, and I like bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's
at
a
this
game
point,
that you've heard
a long
is
time
designed
ago.
To make you feel bad,
right? Right.
So I can see avoiding it,
right? Right. No, and I think that's part of it. And the other part of it is it's very hard to go into something when you've heard so much about it and have any idea what you're getting into, or to like then the process of matching your expectations or your perception versus the reality is always so painful, and it never comes out good. So maybe I'm just like subconsciously waiting until 5 years when everyone stops talking about it. Lucas Pope is on his 10th game. He's still killing it. And then I'll go back and play Papers, Please.
Very good. Relevant to you, what is your preferred development music?
Lately, I've been going no music. I've been trying to go no music more and more because I find that music, I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts on this that are very uninteresting and a lot of like experimentation.
We'll put you on a guest post. You can do like,
a 5,000 word
article on it.
A deep dive into working with music.
Right. This is the speed round. So
speed round. Deep house is like my go-to for if I'm going to listen to music, I'll listen to some deep house.
Very cool. GIF or GIF?
GIF.
Game you most remember from your childhood?
We're stopping this interview now. Sorry.
Table flip.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. There's a good story behind it, but it's speed round. Let's go.
Okay. Game dev you'd like to switch places with for a day?
Oh my god.
Wow, that's a really good question.
maybe Greg Wolin, because I'm playing with him on a game.
Parker on his game.
I know, but I want to see like what I'm annoying about and like what is annoying about working with me so I can fix it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very very introspective answer. Cups of coffee consumed per day on average.
Two.
What did you want to be growing up?
The very first thing I wanted to be was a clown.
Wow.
Yeah.
We don't get a lot of
clowns. Or a magician. A magician was probably more what I wanted to be, but I heard that you could go to like clown college to become a magician, so.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do you know any tricks to this day?
No, I don't. I did know a few when I was a kid, and I would put on shows for my family.
I'm kind of starting to try and learn some sleight of hand.
Yeah.
Like card magic.
It's pretty cool. I don't know why I liked it so much. Maybe I think it's because I have a very active imagination, so the concept of doing something that was kind of magical was like very appealing.
Yeah.
I put on a magic show in my backyard that I invited. I printed out flyers and invited everyone in my neighborhood.
How'd it go?
No one showed up.
Oh.
I was crushed.
Oh.
My little sister was my beautiful assistant, of course.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I feel like we should fly your sister in and make you redo the show live for the pod audience.
Right.
It was all like those.
We'll pay per view.
I got a book
I mean.
That was like physics magic. So they were really lame, like science magic.
Oh, like, oh, here's a magnet that's like making something float, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like if you put sand under the tablecloth,
yeah,
then you can balance an egg on tablecloth. It's like, oh, you've made the egg stand.
Yeah, I feel like that requires the pre-knowledge that eggs don't stand, which I feel like for a kid, an audience of kids is like maybe missing knowledge.
I didn't just invite the kids in the neighborhood.
Oh,
I invited everyone.
Okay. Like your school teacher, you're like, Mrs. Teacher, I would like to
invite
you.
Well, everyone that I could reach by foot. I didn't even like to ride my bike at that point.
Okay.
I wasn't confident on the bike.
Understandable.
We're going to make this happen. Don't you worry. We'll make it happen.
No, no. No, we're not.
So another new segment for us. It's called Why Chicago? And it's just, what are some advantages of making games in the Chicago area?
Sure. I think there are a lot of good things about it. I mean, first and foremost, of course, are the people. Like, most of the games that since I've moved here, pretty much all of my game projects have been with other people who I met here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that wouldn't happen if I wasn't here. My current project, everyone working on it, is from Chicago. All five people who are working on it are from Chicago.
Awesome.
And besides just finding partners to work on things with, it's also just the level of encouragement and accountability that is very important, I think, for getting started with just trying to make anything, finish anything. Because
mm-hmm.
if you finish, especially when you're bad at first and like you finish something, you have, if you don't know anyone, then there's no one to show it to. But having an indie city games like the meetup that we have in Chicago is huge for just even if it's bad and no one cares, at least someone looked at it.
Yeah.
And someone acknowledged it.
They give you feedback on it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they won't tell you that it... Chances are they won't tell you that it's bad,
mm-hmm.
but you know that it's bad. But just like, you know, someone saying...
It's like doing stand-up. Like,
right.
You can tell if nobody's
right.
laughing, then
right,
you're
exactly.
bad at
so,
it.
But at the same time, it's invaluable to have that. Also, cost of living's pretty reasonable, especially since we are like self-funding our game.
Mm-hmm.
Like having a low burn rate is crucial. So that's also very nice. Otherwise, yeah, it's just a nice place to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's very
yeah. I think that cost of living thing it's come up before when I talk to people. I think it is really important, right? You can live in a decent space and you know not be like I don't know eight guys in a room or something
right.
like that, but still not have a crazy burn rate.
Right, and not only that, but then also being able to even have office space. Like
yeah,
paying a couple hundred bucks for a desk is a real blessing.
Then our third sponsor that we don't mention enough.
Shameless plug noise. Boom.
The Indy City Co-op, which is where we are right now.
Yep.
Great example of
yeah.
a reason to be in Chicago.
That was an excellent answer from someone who is moving.
Yeah, I'm moving.
To Madison.
On Wednesday. But I'm not moving because Chicago offered me something. Didn't offer me something. Well, that's not true. It didn't offer me my girlfriend living here,
right.
so.
That's fair.
Yeah. Otherwise, you should move to Chicago.
Madison is pretty cool, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a long stone's throw away.
So. Yeah, it's like a couple hours.
So I'm going to be there August 17th through 19th. Yes.
Cool. Maybe I'll see you. No, also, is that August?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I'm going to be gone. Sorry.
It's okay.
Shout out to friend of the pod, Craig Stern, who runs the Indy City Games Meetup.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also
yeah, Craig does a great job
of
that.
So to our actual recurring segment, the
yes,
what
this
weird.
Is the only one that we've managed to.
I'm glad that I've been the test subject. This I like it.
The speed round was a big success in my humble
yeah,
opinion.
I think we're gonna.
I feel like I took it a little too slow, but
they were questions that require thought.
Like mm-hmm. I want to talk about coffee. Are you
no?
Are you in the coffee drinkers
no,
channel
I don't
in our
drink
Slack?
Coffee.
There's an entire Slack channel for the Chicago Indie Slack that is about coffee.
I know. William
and it is...
stops at his dev stream, which starts at 3 every weekday.
Uh-huh.
He stops it at 4:20,
uh-huh.
not to smoke weed, but to,
right.
to brew coffee and talk about coffee
yeah.
for a couple minutes.
It's great. We send each other pictures. We talk about taste. We talk about cream. We talk about sugar. Anyways,
so, but you're only 2 cups.
It's all foreign.
I'm only 2 cups. Yeah,
okay.
It makes me go crazy.
They have to be quality cups. Then.
Yeah, that's true.
You
yeah,
gotta make
you
it count
too.
I lose
cups.
My mind if I have more than 2 cups. Every once a month, I have a day where I'm like, you know, maybe today is the day where I can have more than 2 cups and
mm-hmm.
have a workout. And whether it's that day or whether it's 2 days from then, it will always end in ruin. Like it without fail, destroys me.
Yeah.
For similar reasons to like. The no music.
Planes fall out of the sky.
Right.
Trump was nominated.
Oh, that
stuff.
Was your fault.
Yeah,
was,
sorry. Actually, I had 3 cups
coffee.
Of coffee when you won. I'm really sorry.
Actually, my day of ruin with coffee was actually last year's Bit Bash because they had the free cold
brews. Oh, yes.
I had like 8 of those. I literally did not sleep until 7 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. Cold brew is so dangerous because
mm-hmm.
it has none of the acidity that keeps you from, that stops you.
Right. And it was also hot, so I was like, oh, this is cool and refreshing, and didn't take account of that.
See, I've completely taken this quick question, this quick round, and then blown it out.
That's cool.
Was,
that's
oh,
cool.
We're out of speed round now. There are no time limits anymore. but anyway, getting back
what
to
weird.
Our the what we're. The what we're is what we are reading, listening to, playing, our media consumption. We're media people. We create media, so what inspires us? You want to get kicked off, though?
Sure, I'll start. Mine are almost never games, because I rarely play video games. But I'm reading a book right now by Douglas Adams, the Hitchhiker's Guide guy,
mm-hmm.
but it's called Last Chance to See, and it's about him traveling around the world trying to see endangered species before they go extinct,
mm-hmm.
basically. And it's hilarious, and there's science, and it's so fun.
When did he write that?
88.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was
yeah,
2 years
my,
old.
My roommate recommended it to me in college, which was 15 years ago. So,
yeah, it's something that like I've been recommended multiple times, and it's like a Richard Dawkins' favorite book.
Mm.
And
one thing?
Or do no, you want? Can. Yeah, whatever. Sure.
Oh, is it my turn?
Oh, I can go.
Oh, I can. I mean,
I've been listening to.
we'll edit all this awkwardness out.
Right. Ignore our live stream. We're all friends here.
I have so many things I want to talk about. So I'm like, oh, just one. Okay, I can.
Pick no,
well, we can go around again.
Okay.
I've been listening to Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History podcast, which is fascinating. For any creative types, I'd suggest he has a podcast on the nature of genius, and it compares Cezanne and Picasso. And it's a very, like, to give you the skinny of it, like...
This is very erudite.
Yes. Picasso was a guy that could just say, like, oh, I'm going to make a great painting, and he just went and did it. And Cezanne was a guy that took his literal life to become a good painter. He would do, you know, 100 different drafts before he finally got to one that he was happy with. So when we think about genius, we always think about the Picasso type. But I think for the vast majority of the population, the Cezanne type is actually what you should be.
Which brings us back to the, like, plot diagram person.
Exactly.
Like, see to your pants.
Yeah, no, there was a really interesting piece on that same subject. Anyways, it was about writers specifically that I really liked.
Well, I think it applies to, like, a lot of different creative types, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at it in music, like, some musicians, you know, they can just riff and have a hit, but in some musicians, they, you know, toil for hours in the lab to get one song done. And I think it's the same for game designers, right? You see a lot of these one-hit wonders, people that just, you know, make a game that's amazing, and then people that just, you know, it's their 25th game is the one that
or, you know, they're just naturals, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a one-hit wonder.
Sorry, I didn't mean, like,
intuitive.
I meant that, like, they are just good game designers.
Yeah, exactly.
And the first game they make is just an amazing game.
Right. Like Mappa of Downwell. First game he makes,
yeah.
It's incredible.
I was going to say, like Willie or Jake Elliott.
Jake Elliott's, yeah.
Anyway,
what have I been... Oh, yeah, so I have so many. I guess I'll do a game since this is technically games-related. I've been playing Overwatch.
Overwatch is a lot of fun.
An incredible game. So I've been playing a lot of that. I've been reading Hatching Twitter, the book about how Twitter was created, which is also super interesting. Also very interesting in the sense of... kind of like the perception of genius or the story of how a thing was created and how we perceive it and how we perceive its creators and the stories of the people who aren't part of the story anymore. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then I started watching 2 days ago, I'm only a couple episodes in, but it's pretty good so far, is Amazon's All or Nothing about following the Arizona Cardinals for an NFL season, which is also incredibly interesting and good. In the sense that, like, I think a lot about sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot about games as they relate to sports and how sports are the most mainstream version of games.
Mm-hmm.
And how games, you know, the concept of, like, this, like, emergent gameplay or, like, this, like, games that tell stories, like, that is a thing that has existed in sports since sports have existed.
Mm-hmm.
And this show is kind of then an exploration of that in terms of, like, then taking the human stories and completely exploring them, but then also having the game be a backdrop, whereas typically when you watch sports, the personal stories are kind of like...
The backdrop.
The thing that you don't hear that much about, and then the games are kind of like the real, like, you know, oh, it was like, you know, 29 to 27, and then
he did this thing.
So that's very... I recommend it. I also just like watching, consuming media about people doing their jobs. I think that's like... one of the most interesting things, and like watching these sports players who have such a strange job, watching like a general manager who has such a strange job to like pick players, to like look at a player and try to judge, is this player going to be good? Is this player who we need? And then also like a coach, which is like manager of the most difficult degree, where it's like you're in charge of like, you know, an enormous roster. They all have very like insane personalities. Then mixing that with
like physical fitness,
right?
And
all of
like
these
injuries.
Things, also personal problems,
yeah.
Also, and then like not only that, but then also the strategy of the game and how do these people fit in the strategy of the game and how do you build the strategy of a game around that? So it's very, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah,
And I'm looking
so
forward
that, to
that
actually
returning.
Kind of ties in with my second what we're is I'm reading is a book by Angela Lee Duckworth on grit.
Oh yeah.
And the power of grit.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because I feel we got a lot of tie-ins. But anyway, it's just how we look at people and we assume that talented people are successful, which is actually a really bad indicator of final success. Success is more predicated on this weird or kind of esoteric metric called grit. And grit is really like how persistent and passionate and resilient are you? And if you have a really high grit score, talent matters less. It's the guy who, you know, might not be the fastest or the biggest, but he's the guy that's always in the gym and he's a guy always working out. It's shown that those people just are more successful in general.
That has been talked about in education circles.
Yes, education is a big part of the book too, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But that's sort of the biggest wave, I think. Maybe growth mindset and grit are like the two
mm-hmm.
things that are causing sort of a revolution in teaching right now.
And actually she touches on growth mindset as like a subset of grit, right? If you can instill growth mindset, that actually is a way to produce more grit in kids growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
So I'd recommend it. Is that there was actually a really good part about deliberate practice, like how do you become better at something? It's like, well, you have to put in practice that's like hard and that's like difficult for you. And the best way to do that is just to schedule like time, like at a certain time of the week that you do this. So I've actually started like putting in chunks of time to say like, okay, I've got a really like tough coding problem. Like this is your time to handle it. And it makes it easier because normally what happens is when I start coding, I just do like the fun things and I never get to the tough stuff. But now that I have like these blocks, it's like, okay, we're going to tackle tough stuff here. I just know that like then is where I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it easier for me to kind of get to that.
Yeah. And less guilty when you're not working.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know you're going to. Thank you so much, Bendix, for coming and chatting with us.
This was fun.
Thanks
for having me.
Can you plug all your stuff?
Sure. Yeah, please.
All right. Probably the easiest place to find me is on Twitter. I'm Benedict Fritz. Benedict like Benedict Cumberbatch, and Fritz like the fridges on the fridge.
Like Fritz Lang?
Fritz Lang, also. Our game that we're working on is called Tumbleseed. You can find out more. Not really. You'll see a very... unclear website that's kind of good looking where you can put in your email and we'll let you know when it's out. It's called tumbleseedgame.com. And yeah, we'll hopefully start talking about it more soon. So we'll have a trailer and there will be a site and you can actually find out what it is about. And that will be very exciting. Tumbleseed is also on Twitter, tumbleseedgame, in which we tweet in the character of the seed in our game to varied success. So yeah. Check it out. Mostly Twitter. That's where you'll find me.
Awesome.
Right on.
And yeah, we'll just do our plugs quick. I'm Kiwon Hong at Kiwon Hong, and my game is Contract Word. Check it out on Facebook at Contract Word Game.
And I'm Bobby Locks, Rob Lockhart, working on Codemancer. It's codemancergame.com.
Cool.
Sweet.
Thanks
again, everyone.
Guys.
This has been super fun.
Thanks to the people who asked questions.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Facebook.
And yeah, we'll talk to you next time. It'll be episode 21.
21.